Now, I may well know that this so-called self does not exist, but I don't believe it for one moment. So everything is telling me the opposite. I've even secured my arm again. So the trouble with reality is that it's counterintuitive. Tsongkhapa found it was the opposite of what he expected. Yet we need our intuition to find it. When eyesight fails, find a railing to follow. So can we trust our intuition? The Buddha did not teach that you do not exist, only that you can't find yourself. I didn't say that your arm does not exist, only that you might lose it. It's not that there is no me, there most certainly is. It's just that this me is empty.
If you are what you grasp, you would not be here. For what you grasp comes and goes. It cannot be you. How can the grasped be the grasper? You're not different from what happened then. If you were, you would not need a past.
I was here before.
No, you weren't.
I was, and I wasn't.
You neither were nor weren't.
I will survive.
No, you won't. Opinions are absurd.
So if this self, this cup, this fixation is what I have grasped, then where is the grasper? And if this self, this cup, is the grasper, then where is what has been grasped? Where we are going, there is still me, still you, but no grasping. We're going beyond fixations.
Were mind and matter me, I would come and go like them. If I were something else, they would say nothing about me.
So I want you to just close your eyes for a moment, and I'm going to tell you something that Rumi says about the self. Even if the veil of self is as thin as an eyelid, it will blind us to the reality of things as they are. You can open your eyes again now. So, where do we find this wine?
Gone, inner and outer. No moon, no ground or sky. Don't hand me another glass of wine. Pour it into my mouth. I've lost the way to my mouth.
The wine is in the tavern, the Karabat. And Karabat, it means literally ruin. So that's the name of a tavern. You'd call it a ruin. So in the tavern of ruin, we find not only wine, but music, dancing girls and prostitutes. And pious Muslims would not set foot in these places. But when crowds of people became too much for Rumi, he would go to the tavern to meditate. And once he was supposed to be giving the Friday lecture and nobody could find him anywhere. And it was reported that he was in the tavern. And his disciple, Hosen, goes to find him. And he so doesn't want to set foot in this tavern, especially on a Friday. So he covers his eyes up and he somehow manages to find Rumi in the dark and doesn't open his eyes until he's right in front of Rumi's face, so he doesn't see anything else that's going on there. So the tavern is samsara. It's a glorious hell that we human beings enjoy and suffer and push off from in search of truth. So I like this idea of pushing off, like in a boat, from firm land. We push off from samsara in search of truth. The tavern is the human condition. It's happiness and suffering. There's a Bjork song which says, I carry my joy on the left and my pain on the right. And that's the human condition. I think sometimes as Buddhists we can think that there is something wrong with samsara. We can even try to fix it. There is nothing wrong with samsara. Samsara is perfect. So samsara, the tavern of ruin, is the perfect place created by us from which we push off in search of truth. So perceiving a mine, we cling to a material world. Does this mean that there is a material world which we cling to, or more that clinging creates our world? With our help, existence arises in emptiness.
Praise to the emptiness that blanks out existence. Existence, this place made from our love for that emptiness, yet somehow comes emptiness. This existence goes. Praise to that happening over and over.
This world which is made from our love for emptiness. So how is it we make our world? We create our world through perception. It isn't that there's no world out there. It's just that self and world are interdependent. So we shape the world through perception, while the world shapes us. Consciousness is coloured by what it feeds on. So for Joanna Macy, insight is insight into the very process of perception. To understand perception would be to understand how self and world co-arise in emptiness. The Buddha therefore tells us to pay close attention to the world of our senses. So what happens when we perceive an object? There is a co-arising, a co-igniting of self and object in that moment in emptiness. They arise together. Self arises with object. So for this lectern to exist, three things needed to coincide. So there needed to be a sense organ. Yeah, if I was asleep, there would be no lectern in my world unless I was having an anxiety dream. So there's the eye. There needs to be a sense object that comes within range of my sense organ. So if this was outside, well, it wouldn't exist again in my world. And then there needs to be impact. So there could be me with my eyes open and a lectern, and the lectern would still not exist unless there was some contact which was either deliberate or accidental. I might have just bumped into it rather than been looking for it. So because of this, perception itself is a relationship of mutual dependence between these three things. We co-arise, co-ignite with the world of things. In a sense, self and world create one another, or at least depend on one another. So these three, organ, object and attention, they constitute a sensory sphere. Or a sort of they co-ignite, and that co-ignition is a sensory sphere. So when the Buddha says, there is monks that sphere wherein there is neither earth nor water nor fire nor air, wherein there is neither this world nor world beyond, nor sun nor moon. Monks, there is a not born, a not become, a not made, a not compounded. Monks, if there were not, there would be no stepping out here from what is born, become, made, compounded. So there is, monks, that sphere. And the sphere that he's talking about, nirvana, is not a place or a realm, but a way of perceiving, where senses and world drop away. Yatha Bhuta Jnana Darshana, seeing things as they really are. And Padmasuri said that my name means that, really. And in a way, that's always been a kind of my thing, I suppose, this idea of seeing things as they really are. But I think it's also been quite misleading, in a way. It's not that one day I'll see things as they really are. It's not that there's a real world that's out there, hidden behind this illusory world. Insight is a way of perceiving. So it's not that we will have insight into things as they really are, but we'll have insight into our own process of perception. That's what we'll see. We'll see our process of perception. And when we can deeply understand the way we experience, when we fully see the process of our own perception, that will be seeing things as they really are, which I guess is just like this.
Were everything not empty, nothing would happen. Nirvana would be a letting go and stopping of what? Nothing let go of, nothing attained, nothing annihilated, nothing eternal, unceasing and unborn. That is Nirvana.
So emptiness for Nagarjuna is contingency, to see dependence, connectedness and relatedness in everything, and to ease our fixations. So as we ease this fixation of self, we also ease that which separates us from our world. So we are freer to enter into the shifting, beautiful, tragic flow of the world which we are creating and being created by. So we'll have an intense awareness of life in all its complexity and beauty. Yet when we look to find the person absorbed in that life, there'll be no one there. So it's not that self and world will disappear. In fact, our experience will be all the more vivid. But there'll be an easing of our grip. Self and world, but no longer grasper and grasped. So it's not that we go beyond experience, it's just that we let go into experience. And although I create my world with complete seriousness, fixing me, fixing you and things, that which I try to fix is utterly unaffected by my efforts. However much I define, label, dissect, analyse, I leave no trace on the seamless web of life.
Your muddled conclusions do not affect emptiness. Your denial of emptiness does not affect me. It is all at ease, unfixable by fixations, incommunicable, inconceivable, indivisible.